if we don't back ourselves up, who is going to do that? Like, you are your biggest cheerleader. You can always find the small things to criticize and improve. But if you don't celebrate your achievements, it's not as meaningful.
Welcome to the Athlete's Compass podcast. Each week, renowned sports scientist and founder of Athletica AI, Dr. Paul Larson, athlete, coach, and sports scientist Mariana Rakai, and coach and cyclist Paul Warlowski discuss training, racing, and improving your health and fitness. Get ready for your journey to peak performance. Hello and welcome to the Athlete's Compass podcast, where we navigate training, fitness, and health for everyday athletes. After months of training, sacrifice, and anticipation, crossing the finish line of a big race should feel like a high point. But for many of us, it's followed by an unexpected emotional crash. In this episode of the Athlete's Compass, we are going to explore the often overlooked experience of post-race depression or blues, what causes it, how to navigate it, how to move forward with purpose and perspective. If you're feeling lost after your last big event or supporting someone who is, this conversation will offer strategies and insights to help you. We'll talk about four parts of the topic. Why does post-race depression occur? How and why to celebrate your accomplishments? Taking some time off and setting a goal for the next event. So let's talk definitions first. What is post-race depression and how common is it among endurance athletes?
I think it's pretty common, isn't it? I think we've all experienced a little bit of a blues after a big race. Maybe not like a local 5K race, but when we've put in the work and dreamt and suffered through the big race and crossed that finish line, eventually it will sneak up a little bit like, oh, now what?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. So when in my days, we would call it AIDS, after Ironman depression syndrome. Because I've done a lot of Ironmans, and that's always what we would sort of talk about. So there's all of a sudden this reduction in the endorphin levels that are sort of in the brain and whatnot. So yeah, and like the cortisol levels are high around the event, and then they're kind of, you know, they're a lot less now, and we need that. You know, we often talk about cortisol as kind of a negative thing, but it's actually, you know, it's got sort of both ends. It's really important sort of as well. Important, like it makes you feel good too at the same time. So yeah, there's all these various different neurochemical processes that are all of a sudden changing. And yeah, and you're adapting sort of to this new normal. Lots of physiology going on in the background. It's a real occurrence. You're not just, if you're listening to this and you think that you're unique in this, you're not. It's just so common. So yeah, like what do you do about it, I guess, is sort of the next obvious question, right?
Yeah, and I think some of it can be related that we don't celebrate our accomplishment. Like, yes, we get that medal hanging on our neck, but then, you know, everybody moves on. Your family has gone through the same thing as you did. They've tried so hard to support you, and then it's over. So they are moving on to, you know, oh, okay, so mom came home from this race. Now we can get back to normal. And now mom will pay a little bit more attention to us. And they just move on. And I think a lot of the time when I hear athletes struggling with the post-race blues is one question that I ask, well, did you celebrate? What did you do to celebrate? And yes, it could be, you know, new gear, or they take out family for gratitude dinner or something, but many of us don't celebrate it. They don't, like, we don't put an end to it. We just kind of like let everything, you know, go. And sometimes it is good to have a partner to go through the race day and even a few days after. Like I'm lucky to have Paul coaching me, and we always talk about the race after. And it is such an important thing, because you go through not just things that maybe didn't go as planned and you can learn from them, but to just to kind of process the whole thing. And it is the end of that whole training block. It ends in the race. And unfortunately, many people don't get to talk it through. So it really does end there. But if you have a coach or if you have a friend or even hanging out after the race with somebody else, if it's a friend or a teammate, and just going through each other's race reports, even writing it down on our forum, please do that. We always love to read your reports. That can help kind of like process what happened and really kind of like pin the needle on the whole process and, you know, the race and what did I learn, and maybe even started thinking about what's next. So I think like celebrating and reflecting on that is important.
Absolutely.
I know that after doing nationals, you know, for cyclocross, you know, it's in December and I have finished that race several times and realized that, okay, I have dedicated this whole season to cyclocross and now it's December and it's cold and dark and I need to figure out what I'm going to do next. And, you know, it's that I don't want to train. And I just had one of my athletes just finished Ironman Ottawa and he just stopped training and just did stuff around the house and kind of just took care of himself and his family before moving on to something else. Mm-hmm. So how do we know when this feeling after the race is just fatigue or, you know, kind of the letdown and something a little more serious like depression? How can we tell the difference?
That's a good question. And certainly, you know, I don't think any of us can claim to be real experts in this other than our, you know, our own sort of history and background in it and having experienced it ourselves, probably with both. But I think maybe, you know, more of a clinical depression, to answer your question, Paul, would be sort of prolonged. Like it just doesn't go away. It doesn't continue. And whereas with respect to what we're talking about today, the AIDS, the after Ironman depression syndrome, post-race blues or whatever, this is almost, you almost kind of got to expect it because you remember, just going back to why this is all happening in the beginning, with the race, there's this huge dopamine surge, right? Dopamine, pleasure hormone. Everyone's like, the dopamine centers are so fired when you're, you know, doing your A event for the year kind of thing. It's a huge accomplishment. And then that's all of a sudden taken away in the time course that's following. There's not really too much you can kind of do about that until the regulation centers are getting used to their new baseline. So it's almost an addiction issue, right? Like exercise is there, it's a positive drug, but at the end of the day, it is, we're all drug addicts. You know, all of us listening to this in a little bit of a way, we've got this relatively positive addiction that we call exercise and training and, you know, we're all used to that. And when it gets pulled away, that's kind of that process. So, but to answer your question, Paul, something clinical would be something that is really, you can't get up out of bed. It's, you're having a really hard time kind of regulating your mood, your normal mood thereafter. And that's when you need to, you know, talk to someone a little bit more about this, like that episode we did with Pete, Paul and others. So yeah, that's kind of more that's when things, you got to look further into things.
Yeah, I think if you can't find joy in anything else either, if you can't find joy outside training either, I think that's a pretty good sign that you might need to talk to a professional.
Yeah. You know, I love that word joy. And the only reason is because, well, not the only reason, but one of the key reasons is we're actually developing a tool. We have developed a tool in Athletica that Andrea has developed, and it's basically listening to your comments that you leave in Athletica, and I think I've spoken about it before, but it will be coming to life pretty soon, and it's our semantic analysis, looking at your sentiments, it's looking at the words that you choose, your mind chooses to write in terms of your comments, and you subconsciously might not actually be aware that you're using language that might be have more of a sadness resonance to it versus a joyful resonance to it. But we in Athletica have picked this up, and we actually published a case study on this. We've proven the concept, and now we'll actually be implementing this in for both athletes that are self-coached as well as coaches to be able to kind of flag when that sadness is sort of prolonged. And we can link to the paper that we're speaking about. But yeah, I think tools are coming to actually flag that further for the user, to your question, Paul, and in terms of like when this is sort of too prolonged and you're not kind of starting to use more joyful comments, because there's kind of this cascade of the thousands of different words that we could choose. You can actually place these on a continuum of more joyful or more sad kind of comments. Yeah, again, just geeking out. I just think that's so cool.
What role do you think identity plays in post-race blues or depression, especially if someone has centered their life around preparing for this event, you know, especially for a big event like an Ironman that is kind of all-consuming with training?
Yeah, I think if somebody's identity is to be a triathlete and that big event passes by or you don't even get to the start line, which is, it's possible, it can totally spiral you down into depression for sure. But if you can see yourself as somebody who does triathlon, it's not as big of a deal to, you know, do the race and then continue to look forward to finding something that gives you joy and purpose. So I think tying yourself up to, you know, an identity, or I am a triathlete, instead of, you know, I am someone who does triathlon, can be a pretty big deal.
I think there's lots of different ways and lots of different perspectives and lenses to look at this question, Paul. And I think I've probably gone through it, lots of different sides and being on different sides of it. So I would have the earlier on years when I was a competitive triathlete, you know, in the elite level, and I very much had a heavy identity on being a triathlete, so much so that, you know, I pulled out of Kona, stopped. Basically, I wasn't going to place high up in Kona, and it was wrong. But at 5 miles in the marathon, I walked back to my hotel. It was a regretful moment as a young triathlete that was really good in terms of the learning experience, because it stuck with me forever. It really stung, and I never dropped out of a race thereafter, because I always wanted to still finish something after that. But I, at that point in my development, I was very much had this identity wrapped up of I was going to be, you know, a triathlete that goes to the Olympics and all these sorts of things. It was so important for me. But yeah, and of course, we're all a work in progress, right? And I think I'd slowly sort of developed more and more towards what sort of Mariana's saying here, where I'm no longer a triathlete. I'm someone that likes to do triathlon, or someone that likes to train for triathlon or train for an event. And I'm doing it for my health and fitness. I think we're all sort of a work in progress on that, but I think very much at the point the identity can probably relate to the severeness of the potential depression thereafter, because I was highly depressed. I remember going on after dropping out of that race, not doing well in a certain race. So at different degrees, depending on different contexts, as we always say, I think, Paul.
Mm-hmm. And how do you teach this to your daughter who is swimming? Does she identify herself as a swimmer or someone who loves to swim?
Well, that's a really good question. I think she's on the fence. So just for a little more context, my daughter is, we've just returned from BC Provincial Championships, where she got 3 podiums and won one event. She's a freestyle butterflyer, and so top swimmer, at least for her age in this province. And I would say she definitely has, you know, she's still developing. So she's not totally obsessed with it. She's about to hike a huge mountain with one of her friends, you know, overnight in the BC Rockies. Wow. So, you know, I think she's definitely quite balanced around all these different things, but so she hasn't, I don't think she's definitely got that key identity is where she's just a swimmer, yet, but she's certainly interested in potentially pursuing that one. So it's not there yet. Mm-hmm. It's a good question. But yeah, it can be quite strong, especially when you're getting all the strokes, you know, when you find you've got a talent in one of these sorts of things. So you want to sort of throw your identity towards that. And that's the risk for all of us. And here's the push and pull of that dopamine and relief sort of thing. And then again, we've been in the car on holidays ever since this championships. And she's expressed more relief following her big event and most of her success. So which obviously shows the pressure that she's placed on herself to kind of go in there and, you know, perform to the level that she was ranked at, right? Swimming's really easy. You put a qualifying time down and everyone else gets to see that time. So the ranking is quite easy, but you still have to deliver on the day at the big event. So yeah, she felt relief and kept saying that, just how happy she was to be on holidays thereafter. Oh yeah, so many different emotions that are out there.
Yeah, super cool.
Steve Magnus, in his book, The Win the Inside Game, uses that exact language with, you know, are you a triathlete or are you someone who likes triathlon? And that is a huge difference. I think that's, you know, we all get sucked into that sometimes, or, you know, that's our identity. Mariana, you talked about celebrating the event and finishing it. Why do you think it's important to take the time to reflect on and celebrate that effort and achievement?
I think it's a stepping stone to what's coming next. Like, I think it's nice to celebrate. It sounds a little controversial almost to throw a party for yourself, but you don't have to have a lavish party, just even if it's just that, oh, I'm going to buy new running shoes or something like that. And, or like reflect it, keep a journal or, you know, like I said, write a race report and celebrate it. Like if we don't back ourselves up, who is going to do that? Like, you are your biggest cheerleader. You can always find the small things to criticize and improve. But if you don't celebrate your achievements, it's not as meaningful as if it comes from other one. That's for me. I don't need the external validation, you know, from you know, medals. But I think if we always just finish one training block with the race and then move on to the next one, 10 years goes by and we're like, what have we accomplished? You know, you mm-hmm. feel unaccomplished if you don't celebrate what you've just done.
Yeah. And I think some of those, I mean, gosh, I just love that race report thread. It's my favorite thread on the Athletica forum. No question. Hands down. Athletica users that write their, you know, their experiences down there. Just know, I read them all. And I get a lot of joy out of listening to your processing on what your experience was. Like, you know, I think with all of us, we have this mind and we have a window to our experience and we have this body that can do these amazing things. And it's so cool to kind of, Mariana says, you're hear your own reflections and your own processing of the experiences that went on whilst you performed these incredible, you know, events that not every human out there can do. I tell Mariana as a coach sometimes, like, you are the emotion you should be experiencing is gratitude often, because like, you're the one that everyone wants to be. Everyone on that course is watching you and wishing they had the power to do what it is that you are doing. So bravo to you for doing that. And it's just wonderful to kind of listen and try to get a little bit of an insight into what you've experienced in this process. And again, it's a moment in time. We're not on this planet forever. And it's just, what do you want to do with the moments that you have? And it's pretty cool to do these incredible feats that not everyone else has the ability, capacity, tenacity to do. So yeah, bravo to all you. And keep them coming.
Yeah, keep them coming. I know race season is starting to wind down, so we should have a a long list of races
in the Northern Hemisphere, but you know, the Southern Hemisphere is picking up and we're starting to see, you know, on the Athletica inbounds and stuff, everyone from South Africa, New Zealand and Australia are really getting on board and starting to, they've seen all the successes like the Luke Evans and whatnot and Cindy Maloney's and Mariana Rakai's and stuff that people have had, and they're you know, they're jumping on the Athletica bandwagon, which is really cool.
So sometimes races, I hate to use the expression meets our expectation, because expectations can be so wild, but sometimes the result may not go very well. How do we process that? Is that part of the race report and the storytelling?
I think so, yeah. Now I have to put the money where my mouth is. I haven't. Did I write from Calgary? I don't think so. Because that my race in Calgary was like, meh. The highlight was the race with Cindy. But rest of it was just like, I don't know if I want to do this again. It's just like, meh. And granted, I think that was a really good point, Paul, because leading up to that, I did not have a really good training blog. I kind of just like signed up for the race just to have a race to look forward to. But there was so much stuff in my life going on this summer that I never really got into I wasn't locked into this goal race, right? So I think everything kind of like snowballed into meh. And that is, it's okay. Sometimes, you know, like I think I wrote on my comments that maybe this is it for triathlon. And Paul said, no, just give it some time. Give it some time. But I think the mental load of my summer was just too much so that I couldn't gather up the energy and the focus into doing the race. Like the race week, I was just like...
Yeah. But I mean, like that's the process too, right? Like you're a more experienced athlete now too, right? And I mean, you know, Cindy's a great example where she finds these different races and stuff that light her up. So she mixes it up every once in a while. She'll do a mountain bike race, you know, or she'll go and do a marathon or a Boston marathon. Just finds kind of like a new challenge that's within her, but it's still something that's sort of a little different. So she's not always doing the same, you know, repetitive weeks, week in and week out. Mm-hmm. Just change up the goal a little bit, which I know we're going to talk about possibly in the next episode. So stay tuned for that one. But yeah, like that's kind of a good reflection also when you're in that reflection mode as you've been doing. And I know you'll probably have something to tell us about on the goals and how you've kind of evolved to this one too. But I was going to go back to Paul's question. It was really about looking at expectations versus outcome. And again, back to my Kaya on the swimming, this is a really key, like as a dad with a bit of a coaching hat on, you know, I'm not her coach, but I'm her, you know, advisor. And we as a family were just sort of saying, yes, you've hit all these times, you're ranked very high. There's obvious expectations that are coming up with, and you would be the same. Every Athletica user, you can see what your power or pace profile is. From your chart, you can see what you are predicted to be able to ride, run, swim, row, etc. We can see that from that chart. It doesn't necessarily mean that you will necessarily, you know, execute that on the day. It's within you, but you've got to sort of go and do the job. But we were very clear with our Kaya, just, you know, it doesn't matter, whatever happens, you've done all this great training and irrespective of what the outcome is, we love you no matter what. And it's just go out there, do your best. As long as you try, we're still going to love you just as much thereafter. So it's, you know, the same for yourself, right? We all need to love ourselves. If you love yourself and you can love others, you can give to others. So it's a really important principle sort of for us to all take, and especially if we're talking about these things around identity, you know, and going into these events. So, you know, and again, trying to kind of prevent this crazy potential catastrophe of a depression thereafter, like love yourself first and foremost, love yourself no matter what happens, but do indeed try your very best, know what is within you, still have dreams, I know I always do. I always kind of dream a little, I might get a little bit more out. Might be something a little bit special on that day. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, listener. And yeah, but I think that's good advice.
So we've come to an end of an event. We hopefully have done some celebrating. We've done some journaling. We've done some talking with people. We've processed the event as best. Should we jump right into training? Should we take some rest? And if we should take some rest, what kind of rest? Should we do a complete rest, active recovery, something else? How can we forestall some of that post-race depression?
Yeah, good question. Definitely. I mean, look at you. We got to go back to the physiology there again, right? Remember that we've had all those, that dopamine has been, it's gone. It's, and we got to give it a little bit more now, right? So you do need to, we need to start moving again. We need to start ticking over again, even if it doesn't feel all that great. And maybe there'll be some niggles and stuff that are kind of lingering around often from any of these races, especially if it's running based where they're, you know, they're quite big insults in terms of the muscle damage that occurs. It's hard to kind of move those joints and stuff around, but at least if you can kind of get out walking, even if it kind of pains you to do so a little bit, or swimming, spinning the legs over in the bike, any sort of movement, getting outdoors, being around people, you know, kind of processing and talking it through, like Mariana was sort of saying. I wouldn't necessarily worry too much about the next event. That'll naturally come through. You know, I think the common thing for people to sort of say after they finished a race is, I'm never, ever, ever doing that again. And it, you know, it's usually 6 to 24 hours later. It's like,
what can I sign up?
What can be the next goal, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's the time, I think, when you can kind of start to do that after the A race is done and dusted.
Yeah, don't sell your bike immediately after a bad race because you're going to regret it.
Or throw it in the river, yeah.
Yeah.
I would also say, like, I hear oftentimes, like, oh yeah, I was in cloud nine the first week, and then I felt the blues coming in, so I pulled out my credit card and signed up for new Ironman, and then 10 Ironmans later, they like, oh, I guess I should have maybe stopped at some point. I would actually advise to take some time to not, you know, like, keep your credit card in a wallet and don't sign up for a new race immediately after. But remember, we did the recovery from Ironman study that you did, Prof. And all the physiological markers show that you were pretty much recovered in within a week.
That's right.
And I think, like, take the week and just, like, enjoy being in cloud nine, especially after big race and big achievement, because those come so rarely. And when it's in the back view mirror, then you want it back, right? So just, you know, let yourself reflect and don't hurry the process. Do something that gives you joy. Whether it's, you know, going for a walk with your dog or meet up with a friend and just, like, enjoy the little time that you don't have to, like, you know, try to get all the puzzle pieces together because you want to get your training done and do yoga, go for a, you know, bar class or whatever it is that you want to do that you don't have chance to do otherwise when you're in a training.
That's awesome advice for sure. Because again, reflecting on the whole build cycles that you're in, right? Where time is, you know, there's not much time and you're really putting it all towards training. And no doubt when you're out training, you're thinking, oh my gosh, I so wish I had time to do X, Y, Z. Well, now you do. So go, yeah, make sure that you go and take that time to go and do those things that you said you would when you were training and whatnot. Don't waste the day away and just sit on the couch and watch Netflix or whatever it is. Get out there and do all those things that you were dreaming about.
I think about my Ironman athlete again and how much time he spent prior to the race training and preparing. And he has a family and he works a full-time job. And basically his third job besides his family was training for this Ironman. And when he got done, he kept very active by doing the kind of housework and, you know, painting and getting things done around the house. That's how he stayed active. And I thought that was a really good idea, you know, and it's, he did a Olympic distance kind of family event this weekend and did pretty well, but he just was taking it easy and taking that rest time for himself.
Yeah, that's awesome, because you're right. Like, after you do these crazy races, you've built this huge endurance aerobic platform. And I know Marianne has experienced this herself, where she came back after doing Ironman Worlds, and it was like, you know, it was about 2 months later. She really wasn't doing much of anything in terms of training, but she'd come in and, like, you know, she'd do the velocity sessions, and she would just be hitting it out of the park in terms of her third. She was getting that huge kick. So just like your athlete, Paul, who's like, you know, he's not doing much. He's just keeping busy around the house, doing all the various things, not training that much, but that aerobic base. Remember that if you look on Training Peaks or Athletica either, with basically the CTL, the fitness, it holds for like 42 days, right? The 42 day algorithm. Well, yours will too, right? So it's kind of holding to that. And you're going to be able to still launch into using that aerobic fitness for at least 42 days.
Oh, I would say actually a lot longer. Like, it was so weird. I was mentally pretty empty. Like, I was pretty done after the Worlds. I had done two full Ironmans in a few months. And I was thinking myself, like, I need to sign up for these races, because I was feeling so freaking fit. And I wanted to do, like, I can't let this fitness go to waste that you built, so, you work so hard to build, right? So I did, like, I just signed up for 50K trail run and a marathon. That I love these local races, because you can sign up like a week before. So I signed up in December. I signed up a week before. I said, like, oh, I'm going to run marathon next weekend. And I hadn't really run long distance at all after Worlds in September. But when you go through these build phases for Ironman, and you do the Ironman, that fitness stays. It's not, you know, like, even if the CTL goes down, your fitness is still there. It's not like equal to theoretical fitness. It is there. And just by doing some high intensity weekly velocity sessions, it just allowed me to kind of raise it to another level. And I would say, like, I kept training, like, not like I was training for Ironman, but I kept the fitness going because I love training. That's what I love to do. So I do train, but I wasn't like really blinders on training. If I wanted to take a day off, I took the day off. Or if I wanted to change things up, I did. And even at the end of February, that's a long time. That's like 5-6 months. I did the ski race and I was super surprised. I'm like, I can still perform with a lot less strict training. It's pretty cool.
So when we finished the race, we've started to process it. We've got some solid thinking about our race. We've celebrated. When is the right time to start thinking about a next race or the next goal? I mean, how long should we give ourselves?
How long is a piece of string? I don't think there's a right or wrong answer on that one. It's whatever. You know, it can be different contexts that are going to, you know, someone that's probably new to the sport and just absolutely they're fully committed for, you know, this is what they want to do for the next 5-10 years, whatever, right? Well, they're going to be right away. They're going to be looking at the next, you know, piece of cheese at the end of the maze. So it's like, there's no right or is right away is probably the answer for that individual. But then for someone else that's, you know, a little bit been there, done that, but know that this is a positive input into my life, and it does help me regulate my mood, my mental health, my physical health. And yeah, I think it's probably, you've got a kind of like what Marianna was just sort of saying, you've probably got a good 42 day plus to just sort of kick back and wait for it a little bit. You know, there could be an easy 2 months there in off season, say, for example, and then looking what's kind of coming up on your next race calendar in the, you know, in the next summer sort of thing. What would, you know, what might excite me next year, or just for an A race? And then there can be many different B races and C races along the way. That's sort of what I would think.
I think a lot of people who are new to endurance racing, they get such a huge rush out of racing that they sign up to several races like monthly. And I just want to note that, yes, that's exciting. And I've done that too. But at some point, you do need to take that off season to let kind of some of that fitness go, but also kind of like refuel your tank, not just physical, but mental tank. You got to feel that burn. You got to feel that fire in your belly. Like, what excites me? Like, pick something that you're like, that's kind of scary, but it also excites me. And you, when you think about it, you're just like, you have a little bit butterflies and you're thinking, oh, can I even do that? Yeah. That's my method. That's how I find my next goals.
That's good. Yeah, and if you want me to put my pro athlete coach hat on, the general rule I have with my athletes is we do after the biggest A race, let's say it's a world's event or whatnot, it's mandatory 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks off, and where almost no correspondence with the coach thereabouts, just to kind of really, really put a break on the, you know, the constant communication back and forth. And then it would be also, they come back to me. It's like when they're ready, they make the first move, in other words. So it's like, it's not coach driven. It's the athlete is like, all right, I've had 2 weeks of really just kind of doing whatever. I'm hungry to start getting the training kind of again. And that's usually 3 weeks later is usually when you get that next day email for saying, all right, I want to start ticking over again kind of thing. So, yeah.
So the last real question that I'm curious about is, you know, we're talking about the athlete and what they can do. What about coaches and friends and family? How can they support athletes going through a phase of feeling a little down after their event and feeling that emptiness? What can they do?
Well, first one for all of us, listen. You know, and again, so they, yeah, that's probably the key thing, right? So listen, be aware of it, and then discuss with them, right? Like, it help them work through those emotions that are being expressed as a result of the neurochemistry that we spoke about. Just, yeah, recognize, work through, and then encourage movement and other activities, right? Like, can we go and do that chore around the house that, you know, has been, we've wanted to do ever since, and there's no excuse anymore. Let's get moving. Let's clean the windows, you know, let's clean the garage out, whatever the chore sort of may be that they can kind of do together. Yeah. Just being active with them, I think.
Yeah. I might have promised my husband to do a couple's high rocks.
There you go. Awesome. Love it.
Yeah.
Where is it? Which one?
I don't know. We have to find a ticket.
Apparently, you got a ticket. Yeah, because they're always so sold out, aren't they?
Yeah. So we'll see. I might get a long time to prep, but yeah, I might have promised him that we'll do something else that is not triathlon related. That also he feels like he's at. Although he's picked up swimming, so that's exciting. We went swimming on Saturday.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I love it. Speaking of HYROX, folks, don't forget that HYROX plans are in Athletica with Coach MJ here on the program, who's given all the video demos on all the various different HYROX movements, all the station movements. She does an incredible job. Yeah, be sure to check those out if you're looking for an alternate activity or goal post Ironman or endurance race.
Yeah, or if you want to build up your strength, those are also available on Velocity.
Incredible. Incredible.
Anything else we want to add to our discussion about post-race blues and depression?
Nothing is wrong with you. This is part of the process. So
I think that's important.
Yeah. It's
I,
natural
I would agree.
Part.
I would agree. I mean, I would almost kind of expect it to kind of come. It'll be in different degrees for different people, but sadly, it's just kind of a part of the, it's part and parcel of what it is that you're doing. remember that it is sort of that withdrawal of the dopamine response that we get from that constant training, and then the actual big event itself, big, huge dopamine hit in your brain. And then all of a sudden that's not there anymore. So it's just, it's kind of natural. Don't sweat it, but recognize it and then continue to work with others to work through it and just stay out there, keep moving, keep sleeping, and all will be fine soon. And if it doesn't, as we spoke about, make sure you go get special help from wherever you can.
Agreed. Thanks for listening today to the Athlete's Compass podcast. Take a moment now, subscribe, share, and let's keep navigating this endurance adventure together. Improve your training with the science-based training platform Athletica and join the conversation at the Athletica Forum, especially for your race reports. For Mariana Rakai and Dr. Paul Larson, I'm Paul Warlowski, and this has been the Athlete's Compass podcast. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed another episode of the Athlete's Compass podcast, your North Star through the sometimes complicated world of training for your endurance sport. We appreciate your comments and training questions and your 5-star reviews. For a deeper dive into the science of endurance sports, listen to the Training Science podcast and check out the adaptive AI training platform athletica.ai. Thanks for listening.